If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
What real estate professional status allows you to do is get around those passive activity rules. So if you qualify as a real estate professional, and if you materially participate in the rental activity or grouped rental activities, then you have a non-passive loss. If your rental activities produce a loss, you will have successfully recharacterized that passive loss and made it a non-passive loss.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Brandon is a certified public accountant, a national speaker, and is the managing partner of the Real Estate CPA. Brandon works with real estate investors, syndicates, and private equity funds to optimize tax positions and streamline accounting and business functions. He believes that real estate investing is critical to building sustainable and generational wealth. Through the knowledge gained by working with real estate investors, Brandon invests in multifamily and single-family rentals, as well as running his certified public accounting firm with 21 employees. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man, this is great. This is great. I love having niche people come on the show because it gives us a chance to really dive deep in a hurry and kind of find out some of the things that most of us, especially as real estate investors, probably don't understand. I mean, I can tell you as a real estate investor, I understand high level some things. I understand real estate and I understand how to make the money in real estate. But when it comes to accounting and things like that, I mean, I don't know if you have other clients like me, but my eyes just kind of glaze over and I go, oh, crud. I don't know. So I'd love to kind of dig in today and really get your perspective on accounting, especially as we scale our real estate and see what things we're doing wrong. I know you've got a really just kind of a deep bench of experience and we're going to get into some niche stuff today. So I guess if you can briefly introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do, and then maybe we can go deep pretty fast.
Sure. So my name is Brandon Hall. I'm a CPA. I run the Real Estate CPA. It's a CPA firm that we have a team of 21 now. So 21 CPAs, EAs, tax professionals, and accountants. We service about 600 clients nationwide. All of our clients are in real estate in some capacity. We work with really small clients and really large clients. Our two largest clients are a $500 million fund and then a gentleman that owns about $1 billion worth of assets. So it's been a lot of fun working on those accounts. But yeah, we do everything in between. We provide tax planning, tax compliance, and accounting services to these clients. And I think we're going to talk about a couple of the key tax planning issues that commercial real estate investors, mid-sized real estate investors are commonly missing and need to be aware of. And whenever I educate and whenever I give talks on this type of stuff, especially if we get into partial asset dispositions, I know that it's going to sound overwhelming, but the key for everybody listening is to just absorb the key words and be able to go and ask your CPAs about it. You just need to start the conversation. And that's what I hope to help people do today.
Right. Well, let's jump right in. I think the first thing you mentioned there was tax planning. What are some things as it pertains to tax planning that we should and should not be doing?
Yeah. So a lot of people think tax planning means, let me sit down and get this like 500-page tax plan for the next 10 years. And we do some of that. We do some of that big, all-encompassing tax planning. But for the most part, when we talk about tax planning, what we really mean is give us your tax returns, give us an idea of where you stand today, and where are you trying to go? We're going to look at all the opportunities that you've missed, and we can see those missed opportunities in your tax returns typically. So we'll start there. We'll talk about the opportunities that you've missed, how to mitigate that, how to stop missing those opportunities going forward. And then we're also going to be asking, what are your goals? How are you trying to scale your portfolio over the next 12 to 24 months? And based on that, here are some tax strategies, I guess, tweaks that you should consider implementing as you scale your portfolio out. So a lot of tax planning is first just understanding where am I missing opportunities and getting educated there. Like a lot of people come to us and they want us to wave the magic wand and immediately get them a $10,000 refund, but it doesn't work like that. First, you have to start with the education, then you talk about implementation. But yeah, one of the big things with our tax planning is passive activity rules, real estate professional status, really understanding those rules inside and out. If you're in real estate in any capacity, you've got to understand the passive activity rules and how qualifying as a real estate professional can help you mitigate your taxable income and among some other things. But I'll wait to jump into this.
Right, right. Well, I mean, so I guess let's go back a step. You say see missed opportunities in tax returns. What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you send me a tax return, I'm going to go to the depreciation schedule, the fixed asset schedule, and I'm going to look at all the items that you've been depreciating over the past decade. And I'm going to be able to tell real quick if you've been doing it right or wrong. And if you've been doing it wrong, then we have to dig a little bit deeper. And then we typically have to dig a little bit deeper. There's a lot of issues around improvements, capitalizing improvements. We see a lot of people still capitalizing $1,500 repairs, which you don't need to do that anymore. Anything under $2,500 can be immediately written off. We see a lot of people capitalizing a repair or capitalizing an actual improvement like a roof, but then forgetting to write off the cost of the old roof that no longer exists. That's called a partial asset disposition. Actually, about in excess of 90% of landlords that we review miss that. They just don't even know to ask their CPAs, and their CPAs aren't doing it for them. So it's just like things like that. It's being able to look at that depreciation schedule and say, hey, you've maximized your depreciation opportunities. You've maximized your repair opportunities. We don't always want to capitalize things because then I'm recovering it over a long period of time, and I'm writing it off via depreciation, which I have to recapture. I have to pay a recapture tax on that depreciation at some later point. So I'd prefer to write things off today as a repair. So we're just looking at that type of stuff, looking at that type of stuff to try to figure out what have you done in the past and really cleaning up those opportunities. I mean, there's thousands of dollars in tax savings there. And you can correct all of that. You can correct it all on the next tax return. You don't have to go and file amended tax returns. You might need to, but you can file a Form 3115 and correct a lot of this stuff on the next tax return. So you get a big boost or big deduction on the next tax return instead.
Gotcha. How far back can you go typically on that type of thing?
With a Form 3115, there's no limit.
Wow. You just need to have really good records, I would assume, in order to get...
Need to have really good records, yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to go back, I think... Yeah. For what is it? The 7 years you're supposed to keep business records or 10 years, something like that. I always look forward to the annual throwing out of the box from whatever that lasts. It's like, oh, there's no, obviously it's always the same number of boxes, but we get to remove one every year. We get to add one every year.
I should say real quick. So my CPA firm's virtual. So all 21 of my staff, I like to joke that we have 21 offices because everybody works out of their own home, right? It makes it sound really big. But we do a bunch of, like, we don't accept anything paper. So you mentioned you've got the box that you're going to throw out. So maybe we need to talk about getting set up with some sort of cloud solution.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's lots of, well, let's talk about organization. I'm going to get the organization book. Next. Let's talk, we'll start with organization, then cloud solutions. And then I'll figure out, you know, how to get stuff cleaned up. When it comes to passive activity rules, what does that even mean?
When people hear real estate professional status, they typically, they're taught that that's a loophole. Real estate professional status is a loophole that allows you to take your rental losses against your ordinary income, like my W-2 income, my business income, and all of that.
Okay.
But the way that I like to teach it is that real estate professional status is actually not a loophole. Real estate professional status is part of the code section that stopped the loophole. The code section is section 469. Section 469 was added to the Internal Revenue Code in 1986. And the purpose of adding it to the Internal Revenue Code was to stop high-income earners from investing in rental real estate and claiming the rental losses against their ordinary income. So they added Section 469 in 1986. And what that section did is it said all rentals are by default passive activities. And any passive activity that produces a loss, that will be a passive loss. A passive loss can only be offset by passive income, and any excess passive losses are suspended and carried forward on your tax returns until you die. And that's what Section 469 does. So basically every single rental, a rental means any rental activity. It doesn't mean it's a single family home. It doesn't mean it's a multifamily home. It can be a triple net lease property. It can be commercial. It can be syndication investments that you're making. Doesn't matter. If it's a rental activity, it's a rental activity, and it's passive by default under Section 469. What real estate professional status allows you to do is get around those passive activity rules. So if you qualify as a real estate professional, and if you materially participate in the rental activity or grouped rental activities, then you have a non-passive loss. If your rental activities produce a loss, you will have successfully recharacterized that passive loss and made it a non-passive loss. And that's important because my W-2 income, my business income, my my gain on like sale of GameStop, you know, all of that, dividends, interest, it's all non-passive income. So my rental losses can't offset any of that. And rentals typically do produce a tax loss. Even when they produce operating income, they typically produce a tax loss. And if they don't produce a tax loss, maybe touch base with a different CPA because they should be producing a tax loss after depreciation in most cases. Mobile home parks, different story. Short-term rentals, different story. But in most cases, rentals produce a tax loss. And time value of money theory says, hey, if I've got this loss, I want to claim it today so that I get the refund today and I can reinvest that refund today. I don't want it to be suspended and hang out on my tax returns for years and years and years. So that's why qualifying as a real estate professional, materially participating in the rental activities is really important. It reclassifies that passive loss to non-passive loss, and that non-passive loss can be deducted against all of your other income.
Right, right. No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant because yeah, most people probably are not going to have that much in the way of passive income to offset against their passive losses. So yep. even if you have this whole bucket of passive losses, you don't have a whole lot of passive income. It doesn't do you much good because you can only apply it to that side of the ledger. So that's really interesting. Talk to us about Section 179. I know that's something you specialize in. So what is Section 179 and what's that all about?
Yeah. So before 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, landlords could not use, real estate investors could not use Section 179. Section 179 is, it gives you the ability to deduct business assets, the cost of business assets immediately, very similar to bonus depreciation and how that works.
Okay.
A landlord with residential rental properties, residential being 27 and a half year properties. So when I buy a single family home, that's a residential property, a multifamily home, residential property. I depreciate those homes over 27 and a half years.
Sure.
I cannot use Section 179. I couldn't before and I can't now. So I'm stuck with bonus depreciation, and that's not a bad deal. But for non-residential properties, like mixed-use properties, strip centers, self-storage, anything, office building, warehousing, non-residential properties that are depreciated over 39 years, we can now use Section 179 to immediately deduct the cost of roofs, HVAC units, fire protection systems, alarm systems, and security systems, as well as qualified improvement property. Qualified improvement property is any interior improvement that's not structural. So like think of like a restaurant where they go and buy hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment and they redo a bunch of stuff, but it's not structural. It's more cosmetic. That's qualified improvement property. So all of that stuff can immediately be written off under Section 179. So if you've got like a big office building, it might cost you $60,000 to put a new roof on. Well, previously, you're taking that $60,000, you're dividing it by 39, and that result is what you can claim every single year for 39 years. But now, after the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you put that same roof on and you get to deduct the cost of the roof today in full. And it's not bonus depreciation, so it's Section 179 specifically. It's still the roof is still a 39-year property, so it's not going to qualify for bonus depreciation. Components that qualify for bonus depreciation have to have a useful life of less than 20 years. So a roof, an HVAC, all that, that's all 39-year property because it's attached to the 39-year structure. But Section 179 allows you to immediately deduct the cost of it. The one downside to Section 179, it can't give you a tax loss. So if you already have a tax loss and then you take Section 179, the 179 expense won't be added to the tax loss. It'll just carry forward. So you should still do it because anytime that you have taxable income in the future, you've got that Section 179 expense that can be that you can tap into.
Right, right. That's really interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah, as you're talking there, and again, I know you understand this obviously this industry very well, but it's interesting just to hear the key words like you said, and then be able to go back and have this intelligent conversation, or at least start the conversation with our CPAs and people that we work with every day saying, hey, you know, what about X, Y, and Z? Tell me about this. This is a personal example. We've got a separate business that leases space, right? Mm-hmm. And in this space, we are responsible for things like HVACs, you know, boilers, all that stuff, right? So say we put a bunch of money into the HVAC system. Can we, as the tenant, claim that Section 179? Or does that just, how does that work as a tenant and not the owner of the building?
Yeah, so that depends. You'd be in the leasehold improvement rules at that point, or tenant improvement rules. And so it just depends on what sort of agreement you have with the landlord at the end of the day. But you could very likely be able to deduct it. Yeah, it depends on that agreement.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. All right. I'll go and ask that. Hey, thanks for answering a personal question here on the
no problem.
The middle of a podcast. That's great. Let's see. We've talked about tax planning. We've talked about what we haven't talked about is an audit. One of the things I think that you do is building an audit, almost doing a pre-audit audit file. What'd you call that?
Audit defense. We don't really know. It's kind of, it's like a new thing for us, at least, that's kind of popped up. Middle of 2020, there was, we got a lot of people coming to us asking how to qualify as a real estate professional, that whole thing that we just talked about, because it's super valuable. If you can take all those rental losses, especially when you do a cost segregation study. I mean, it's huge, huge. So people want to qualify for it, but everybody coming to me, they were all taking the easy way out, you know, counting hours that don't count towards the real estate professional status. Because to qualify as a real estate professional, you have to spend 750 hours and more than half your time in real property trades or businesses. Or you have to spend more time in real estate than you do anywhere else, plus 750 hours. So it's hard to get. But what a lot of people do is they'll count all their research time, the due diligence time, the underwriting time, the time that I spent listening to podcasts. And none of that time is ever going to count towards those two statutory tests, 750 hours and more time in real estate than anywhere else. So after fielding a ton of these questions, I finally just sat down and wrote, I think it was like a 12,000 word guide on real estate professional status. And that has led to now we've actually been representing people in front of the IRS with real estate professional audits. And most of them are losing because by the time they come to us and get audited, you know, the hours that they've logged, the education and the research hours, which don't count. So it's a little too late, but we have had a few people come to us that have been very proactive and they've said, hey, I've got a portfolio. I've got different things going on. I want you guys to come in and effectively pre-audit me and give me a write-up as to where my weaknesses are and what I need to do to improve, because they understand that you claim real estate professional status, you can very likely get audited and you need to be prepared. And so that's been fascinating. We've done a couple of those and it's been a lot of fun because they send us a bunch of documentation and we basically get to act like an IRS auditor and just tear things apart. And they're paying us to be mean, right? Which is awesome, which is great. But I love those people because they know the stakes. They know what's at hand and they know the costs involved. And they're willing to get an opinion up front as to, you know, how solid is this? Where do I need to improve? And those clients are the best clients.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, I mean, it's really getting in front of any of those potential hiccups down the road. That's awesome. Good for them for being that proactive and thinking, is there a way, do you share that 12,000 word document you wrote up? Is that something we can find?
Yeah. Yeah. If you go to www.therealestatecpa.com, that's our website, click on the education tab and it'll say like, there'll be a couple things there, but one of them will be guide to real estate professional status. Click that and you can download it.
Got it. That's awesome. Yeah. I'll actually go do that. Cause that sounds fascinating. Let's jump here in the final four. If we can, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor from the perspective of a CPA?
Keep good documents as you go. Every Sunday, sit down, reconcile your bank account and update your budget and get your receipts in order. Use a cloud-based system. If you can do that once a week, you'll be rock solid.
Got it. Love it. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I read business books all the time. I'm 5 books in this year.
Wow.
Which is great. One of my favorite books that I've read this year is The Culture Code. It's about like how to, you know, I've got a team of 21 people now. And so it's about how do you create a really strong culture and get people moving in the right direction.
I bet that's a challenge. I mean, especially remotely. If you guys are 21 strong all across the country, developing culture remotely. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on maybe on another podcast on that, because
sure.
that's probably a skill set that you didn't foresee yourself developing when you went into being a CPA.
Indeed.
That's awesome. What is one way you are making the world a better place?
Helping real estate investors save money.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I do, that's about it.
Hey, man, that makes my world a better place. So thank you very much. I do appreciate that. Brandon, for listeners who want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
You can go to www.therealestatecpa.com. You can click become a client and fill out a form if you're interested in touching base. You can also email me, brandon.hall@hallcpallc.com. You might get my assistant, Jessica, as she filters out a lot of my emails, and she'll reroute you to the right place. But feel free to email me.
Awesome. Brandon, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.